We're very, very excited this morning. We have a special guest, Mike Stagg, who is a bit of a Renaissance man. He has been a reporter, and we all know that the status of at least environmental reporting is severely underfunded at this point. He also does a weekly guest on a political radio show in Lafayette, Louisiana, and we are very excited to have you. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
I'd also like to introduce my co-host, Janet Hayes, who will also be helping with this interview. Janet, she's waving. You guys can't see that. Mike, so Mike Staggs is here to talk to us about fracking. Now, you may have heard of this. This is the technology used to break up rock, hydraulic fracking, let's say, break up rock and release natural gas from it and capture it. So if you think about a little ice cube, have you ever looked at an ice cube and it has little air bubbles trapped in there? And if you break it apart, the little air bubbles escape. So that's kind of what's happening, but it's below ground. Right. Mike, can you give us a little update, kind of a play-by-play? What's been going on in St. Tammany Parish around this fracking?
Well, in April, it became public that Hellas Oil intended to bring fracking into St. Tammany Parish, that they had leased something like mineral rights to 55,000 acres in the parish, and that they wanted to introduce fracking to St. Tammany at a site about a mile from Lakeshore High School, north of I-12 on LA 1088. There hadn't been an oil well drilled in St. Tammany Parish in about 25 years, according to the Department of Natural Resources. And, it just seemed that if you were trying to provoke a popular resistance to what you were trying to do, that would have been the location you picked. Less than a mile from a brand new high school, a little more than a mile from some high-end subdivisions, in a parish in Louisiana where there hasn't been much drilling, that is based, the lifestyle and the attraction there is a history of clean air and clean water. And, there's Abita Springs and the whole artesian water, The attraction to St. Tammany has always been the clean air and the clean water. A century ago, when people in New Orleans developed tuberculosis, they would be taken to St. Tammany Parish because of the ozone belt. There was a high ozone content because of all the trees. People went there for their health. So this is sort of ingrained in the culture up there. And what fracking did was sort of say, well, all we want to do is pollute your air and your water. It's okay. It's just for money. So it'll be okay. The other thing they never considered is that St. Tammany has the largest percentage of college graduates of any parish in the state. So it's a well-educated population. It's a wealthy population by Louisiana standards. And so they just sort of, I think, stepped into this, not realizing or anticipating there'd be any resistance at all. And at the time, I was engaged in a coastal zone bus tour with the Louisiana Bucket Brigade and the Green Army and Restore Louisiana Now. And it so happened that our last day was May 1st. On May 1st, there was an fracking informational meeting at the Abita Springs Town Hall that the League of Women Voters of St. Tammany acted as the host for. There were 600 people there. This was a Thursday night. Down the road at Coop Road, where the St. Tammany Parish government is located, there were about 300 people there for a parish council meeting where it was going to be discussed about whether they were going to retain a law firm to challenge this. So on a Thursday night in the spring, beautiful weather, nice sunny day, 900 people turned out for a public interest meeting, for a couple of public interest meetings dealing with fracking. And LOGA, Louisiana Oil and Gas Association, the Department of Natural Resources, the Army Corps of Engineers, the Gulf Restoration Network, and the St. Tammany, the Lake Pontchartrain Basin Foundation all had representatives on the panel. And the guy, Logo used two people. The original guy gave a little dog and pony show that they use frequently, and it included a video on fracking. And at different points in the conversation, there was laughter in the audience. The head of Logo was there, Don Briggs was there, his son Gifford Briggs was there. And after the initial presentations, Gifford got up and went to the panel and took the place of the guy who'd given the original presentation. And when he tried to tell the people that the chemicals used in fracking were no different than the chemicals under their kitchen sink, he was almost laughed off the stage. So they were not prepared for the resistance they got. And what's happened since then is the parish has decided to file suit. They've been joined by concerned citizens of St. Tammany. The town of Abita Springs has retained the Tulane Environmental Law Clinic. So there's a broad range of legal actions against that. Hellas, for some reason, picked this location that is in wetlands. So the first hearing was supposed to be in May that dealt with trying to get a wetlands permit. And what was really interesting is that people from St. Tammany showed up at that hearing in Baton Rouge at DNR. And Patrick Courageous of DNR was quoted in the Times-Picayune as saying, this was highly unusual to have citizens actually at a hearing. What this entire process has revealed is the degree of regulatory capture that exists in Louisiana of the Department of Natural Resources and the Office of Conservation by the oil and gas industry. And citizens are intruders in this process. And it was exhibited there at that first hearing. And then finally, the town of Abita and concerned citizens of St. Tammany requested the DNR hold a hearing in St. Tammany on the drilling permit, which is a separate permit. The wetlands permit has not been issued. Nothing can happen in St. Tammany. Hellas can't do anything at the location they've chosen because no wetlands permit has been issued. The EPA has come out against the Corps of Engineers issuing the wetlands permit because Hellas has not proven they could not do this someplace else. Because the whole thing about fracking is you're going to drill down, but then you're going to drill out. And their plan, as was revealed at the November 12th hearing at Lakeshore High School, is they're going to drill down about 2.5 miles, about 12,000 feet, and then they're going to go north. They're actually going to drill. They're going to go horizontally back towards Lakeshore High School. The spot they want to get to is actually a little bit north of Lakeshore High School. They're going back towards Abita Springs, and they don't have a wetlands permit right now. But and that's still in limbo because the Corps has not issued it, and they've given Hellas a letter, said, here, you need to respond to these questions raised by citizens and the EPA. So they held this public hearing in November at Lakeshore High School. It was the first time in Louisiana history that there had been a public hearing on a drilling permit outside of a DNR office. That's the first time that there were citizens present at a hearing other than the oil and gas company or the property owner. And so 700 people showed up for this hearing. Hellas had a strategy, and their strategy was, you want a public hearing? We're going to give you a public hearing. We're going to take up your time. The hearing started at 5 o'clock, and it was 8:30 before Hellas finished their presentation. At one point, the attorney for Tulane Environmental Law Clinic said, look, all these people have come out. They want to have their say. You're present. Why don't you just submit your materials and let these people have their say? And the attorney for Hellas said, no, 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 no. The rules say we have to present our case. You want a hearing? We're going to present our case. If you want to, and he tells this to the guy at DNR, if you want to follow the rules, you let us present our case. And so they had three expert witnesses. So by the time they got through their little dog and pony show, and then Tulane had one witness, Tulane Environmental Law Clinic had one witness who wanted to talk about the deficiencies that had been found in DNR's regulatory regime. That took about an hour. So it was after 9 o'clock before any actual citizen got to stand up, anybody from St. Tammany got to stand up and say anything about the permit. The hearing ran until almost 1 a.m. the next morning. It started at 5 p.m. on a Wednesday, and 1 a.m. on Thursday morning, it finally wraps up. And one of the last questions asked was by this woman, Cindy Brookings from Covington, who said, You know, she worked in the oil and gas industry. She's a cancer survivor. She knew people that she worked with had developed cancer. And she asked them point blank, asked the people from the Office of Conservation, how much of what we're saying tonight is going to have any impact on this process? And they got their answer at 5 o'clock on December 19th when the Office of Conservation issued the permit. The answer to her question was it had no impact whatsoever. This was a dog and pony show. It confirmed, again, the degree of regulatory capture that exists in Louisiana. And regulatory capture, the definition of regulatory capture is when an institution, a governmental entity that is whose purpose is to protect the public interest actually goes and turns around and actually acts in the interest of the industry it's supposed to regulate. That is widespread in Louisiana. But in the Department of Natural Resources and the Office of Conservation in particular, this is a terrible problem. It is the core of the problem, and I believe that it is the core. You know, we're seeing these fights happening locally. There was a lawsuit in Houma last year about being able to put a hazardous waste site basically in a neighborhood, an injection well in a neighborhood. And it went to Louisiana Supreme Court, and Louisiana Supreme Court said, well, yeah, they can do it because all the power resides in Baton Rouge with the Office of with the Department of Natural Resources. And so there's been a shift of, you know, the leverage that the industry has been to move all decision making to the state level where they can have the greatest influence and where citizens can't go to participate. And so, you know, it's been a real revelation watching this unfold in St. Tammany, because all they, you know, they didn't go into this with the idea that there that anything revolutionary was happening there. They were just standing up for their community and protecting their you know, their lifestyle, their property values. You know, yeah, right, sure, it was not in my backyard, fine. But what it revealed is this level of political corruption in Baton Rouge between the oil and gas industry and the supposed regulators that is at, you know, at the heart of our, what I believe is our petrocolonial status. And so it's that's where things stand right now. They have Hellas has a drilling permit, but they do not have a wetlands permit. They cannot conduct any activity on the drilling site until a final determination on the wetlands permit is issued. And that's not going to happen immediately because, like I said, a lot of questions have been raised, and EPA has actually come out against the issuance of that permit. One other thing that's going on is, you know, there's been a lot of activity around the country, local communities passing bans on fracking. And Denton, Texas has gotten a lot of attention because that's in basically the heart of fracking country. It was where it's, you know, where it was created, where the boom started in around the Dallas area. And this weekend in St. Tammany, the couple who led the Denton fracking ban movement is going to be in St. Tammany on Friday and Saturday. A group called Tammany Together is bringing them in. There's sort of a social event, some social events Friday. There's going to be a workshop on Saturday. People in St. Tammany are taking this very seriously. They're not rolling over. They're standing up for their community, and the fight's on.
It is interesting. Thank you so much for that play-by-play of what's been going on. A lot of themes running through there: environmental justice, corruption, but also, you know, our energy just use and sourcing. Another thing that really kind of spoke to me when you were talking was that this is a rich community.
Mm-hmm.
This is a well-educated, rich community. And we don't see drilling or hydrocarbon extraction in well-to-do communities.
Right.
So I understand what you're saying, in that the siting of the project was just ill-conceived, in a sense that it's just assumed that these kinds of polluting extractive activities happen in low-income communities, marginalized communities that don't have the ability to have this kind of voice in Louisiana. So that is very interesting. And I love the work of the Louisiana Bucket Brigade, and because they speak up for those mm-hmm. marginalized communities. But this is a groundswell happening in
yeah.
St. Tammany.
At that May 1st meeting in Abita Springs, Scott Eustace with Gulf Restoration Network had a map that he extracted. He got it off of DNR's website. You know, DNR really has some interesting information up there. Nobody ever uses it that much. At least, you know, I'm sure the industry does. But and it shows the location of every well drilled. And there's blank spot in St. Tammany Parish because there's been so little drilling activity there. And like I said, I think 25 years ago was the last time an actual oil well was drilled in St. Tammany. And there were gasps in the room when that map was shown because, you know, it's not there. The reason they haven't had to deal with this is that it's not there. You know, there hasn't been drilling in St. Tammany. I think, the Southern Hills Aquifer is the sole source of drinking water for basically everybody south of Jackson, Mississippi to Lake Pontchartrain and between the Pearl River and the Mississippi River. So there's a million people in the Florida parishes that are affected by drilling in the Tuscaloosa Marine Shale. The Tuscaloosa Marine Shale runs from the Pearl River near Slidell, across the Florida parishes, across the Mississippi River, into central Louisiana, almost to the Texas state line. It's kind of contiguous with this Eagle Ford shale play in Texas. There are two sole source aquifers that are the sole source of drinking water for everybody in South Louisiana. There's the Southern Hills Aquifer, between the Pearl River and the Mississippi River. And then there's the Chico Aquifer on the other side of the Mississippi River. You cannot drill in the Tuscaloosa Marine Shale without puncturing those aquifers. There's just no way. And the problem is, yeah, they say, well, you know, there's so much rock and so many layers of rock between where we're drilling and the water. Well, the problem is there were a couple of studies done last year with the idea of establishing, fracking's safe because, you know, we don't have to, there's so much distance between the oil and the water. But the problem is that what you do is you create a migration path when you drill through it vertically. And we have a little experience with oil and gas drilling in Louisiana. We've only been allowed it for a century. When you drill vertically, and they say, well, we use casing to protect the groundwater from, you know, that we separate this stuff. Well, I just want to remind everybody that casing failure was at the heart of the BP Deepwater Horizon. That was a casing failure. And there have been studies that have shown, and by engineers whose background is in the oil and gas industry, that there's a minimum of 20% failure rate of casing. So if you're going to drill, like they're drilling in the Bakken Shale fields in North Dakota right now, you're drilling 50 to 80,000 wells. Do the math. 20% of that means in the first year you're going to have failures on the rate of 4,000 wells a year or higher. That there is no safe way to frack through a sole source aquifer. And at a 20% failure rate per year, that means within 5 years you have 100% failure rate of casing. So that you are going to have that creates the migratory path for those chemicals used in fracking. Yeah. 12,000, 13,000 feet below ground to move up the drill shaft, the vertical shaft, into the aquifer layer. And this is what a study conducted by Duke University, Ohio State University, three other universities, I think Stanford was part of this. Their objective was to say, you know, fracking's safe because of the distance. But what they found was that casing failure is really the source of the problem because that is, creates the migratory path between the toxins and the carcinogens that you use in fracking to make its way into the groundwater.
So the casing is the one line of defense separating the fresh drinking water for communities.
Well, that's the way it's sold. But okay. to me, this is more damning than anything else because they've been doing this for 100 years and they can't get it right. The casings are involved in every well you drill. And if you've been doing this for 100 years, you either can't get it right or you don't care to get it right. Well, I don't care which one it is.
But I think in 100 years ago, the the amount of pressure that they were using to shoot chemicals and water through the earth was not was a lot less.
Well, they didn't have to use pressure. There was this is not your father's oil and gas industry. The oil and gas industry that we grew up with in Louisiana was all extracted from pools. It was the easy oil. It came. It was almost like Jed Clampett. You know, you shoot the ground, boom, the oil comes. The oil comes up. But you know, you just drilled a vertical well, and the oil came up. It was in pools. This is not oil in pools. It's embedded in rock. They have to, you know, they have to break the formation to free it up, whether it's natural gas or oil. So it's really like underground strip mining in a way, and it's a very expensive process. So what we're seeing now, you know, everybody's saying, oh, the price of oil is, you know, everybody likes the cheap gasoline, but the price of oil has fallen from it's fallen in half over the last year. It was $114, $115 a barrel, and it's now about $57 a barrel as of last Friday. So what does that mean? It means that fracking is no longer economically feasible.
Yeah, I read that Saudi Arabia and the OPEC coalition, or if you will, cartel, mm-hmm. By other standards, is not going to cut production to raise prices. It's speculated that Saudis are trying to kill the fracking industry.
There are a lot of people they're trying to affect. They're trying to protect market share, basically, is what across, whether it's the Russians or it's the Venezuelans or whatever. There's a lot of people out there that are, you know, are engaged in this fight over market share. But there was Goldman Sachs. I'm no fans of Goldman Sachs, but Goldman Sachs had come out with a report last fall that said that you could not make money fracking in the Tuscaloosa Marine Shale at prices of oil under $75 a barrel. So at the time the permit was issued for Hellas on December 19th, the price of oil was over $60 a barrel. It was already not profitable. So this is like a zombie permit. You know, so Hellas, again, Hellas doesn't want to frack immediately. They want to be able to drill this well as like an exploratory well and then decide if they're going to come back and frack. But there's no way they can make it make money for them right now. And the price is not going to stop at $57 a barrel. It's going to fall even lower. And this creates a number of other interesting problems because, you know, a lot of money has been borrowed. Fracking is sort of like a Ponzi scheme in the sense that the companies that are doing the fracking are small and medium-sized drilling companies like Hellas or Goodrich or other people like that that have Comstock, companies that are active in Tuscaloosa Marine Shale. Chesapeake was really big in the Haynesville Trend in northwest Louisiana. They borrow money to drill. As long as you can keep drilling, you're okay because you can borrow new money to sort of pay off your old debt. But it's when you can't keep drilling that you have the problem because then the money comes due and you don't have fresh money to pay for it. And that's where we're headed right now. And we are seeing companies pull back out of – they're stopping operations in the Tuscaloosa Marine Shale. But the debt is still there. Who owns the debt? Banks own the debt. And now they're looking at banks. They're looking at banks that have significant energy portfolios. And there's some banks in Louisiana that have been identified as among those banks. A lot of banks in Texas, but three banks in Louisiana have been identified. Hancock, which in Louisiana does business as Whitney, Mid-South Bank in Lafayette, Iberia Bank, have significant energy stock portfolios and loan portfolios. And so the question becomes, How big is this shakeout going to be, and what does it mean? Well, we've been through this in Lafayette and South Louisiana back in the 80s, and it wasn't pretty. And I think that, you know, I don't know that this will be on this kind of scale because, you know, oil and gas offshore continues to be active. But it's going to have an impact. And the fact is that this was a bubble. It's been described in business journals as a bubble, the fracking bubble. And like bubble,
or carbon bubble, expanding out just from natural gas, but the other fossil fuels, and that they're only worth something if you can get them out and sell them. But there's lots of tricky things that you can't necessarily do that. As you said, we've gotten the easy stuff out.
Right.
The stuff we're getting out now is extremely energy dependent itself. So it's very expensive.
And the environmental impacts are very high. I mean, again, this is like strip mining. This is underground strip mining. The tar sands in Canada.
Yeah. Well, and it's not just environmental. What does that mean? What does environmental impact mean? That means that where you live is now full of poison. I mean, that's what it's not. I don't consider myself an environmentalist, more of a humanist, but, you know, not in my backyard can only go so far. We're in a closed system. We live on one planet. So I think it's kind of the tragedy of the commons is what we're talking about. Like, pollution's okay as long as it's not near me.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the commons because, you know, in Louisiana, we have a severance tax, at least in theory. But what the severance tax is a constitutional expression of the commons. It is the public claim on the resource. It's small. In Louisiana, the severance tax is 12.5% on oil. It's a formula on natural gas based on per 1,000 cubic feet cost. But it does establish a public claim on it. And one of the myths of the oil and gas industry is that it's benevolent. And that benevolence is based on the money it's given to the state to build roads and bridges and schools and hospitals and those kind of things. But we have about $500 million annually in severance tax exemptions. And when we exempt those taxes, we give up our claim. And that is insidious because, first of all, that claim is our standing as a community on the use of the resource. Do we use it or do we not? Is it only about money? And I think that's, you know, we're seeing all this massive development of projects spinning off of this cheap natural gas, the Sasol plant in Westlake, in Mossville. Our state government is engaged in a suicide pact. And that is that we are saying that, and our rampant climate change denial are saying that, we will produce as much greenhouse gas as we want here, that rising seas and sinking land mean nothing to us, and we're writing off South Louisiana just for a few jobs for a short time. That's the trade we're making. And, you know, it's ironic that the place cited by OSHA, NOAA last year for the having the most dramatic effects of climate change, Grand Isle, will be one of the first places to go. And so, like, about a mile away from Port Fouchon, which is going to be protected because it's an offshore oil port. But we're willing to write off South Louisiana in our rampant climate change denial so that some people can make a little bit of money for a short amount of time.
I'm not sure that they think of it that way.
I'm sure they don't.
I've had a lot of conversations with folks about what does relative sea level rise look like to their business model. So relative sea level rise is, okay, we know the land is sinking because we live on a delta, and of course we have sinking, but those seas are also rising. And so whereas other places like Miami will see, you know, a 3 foot up to, 3 to 4 feet of sea level rise.
They're experiencing it now. There's tidal flooding in Miami now.
Yes. But for us, since we're sinking, we have to take that kind of global sea level rise measurement and then add on top of that the sinking that's happening. So a relative sea level rise, 3 feet, will put most of New Orleans underwater.
Yeah.
So in conversations, though, with industry and business people, is that they cannot make financial decisions on policies or science that isn't regulated. They could actually be sued by their shareholders for increasing prices to cover, like, to self carbon tax.
The insurance industry is going to take care of that for them.
So I've been wondering about that. The insurance companies and the banks. Now, the banks, when you get a mortgage on your house, that's a 30-year loan. Is that property even going to be there in 30 years? You have to wonder if the banks are asking these kinds of questions.
Mm-hmm.
But we're all very, very dependent on cheap, abundant, easy to transport fuel. So
it's gone.
There was an interesting report that just came out of University of Texas. I don't know if you've seen it. They think that the peak natural gas is going to happen in 2020 or 2022, much earlier than other estimates. They were able to do a very granular analysis down to, like, where the natural gas is actually, where the different shale plays are happening.
Mm-hmm. They play out quickly. And the other thing, the science, the New York banned fracking last month based on the uncertainties that are out there. And but the more science that comes in on groundwater contamination, air pollution, the impacts on communities, the science on fracking is definitive that these are not worth the cost. The long-term cost that everybody wants to discount, say, no, it's good. No, it's not. It's a short-term profit for long-term degradation of the sustainable climate,
yes,
locally and globally.
But when the companies are making financial decisions, they're not required to incorporate those and that's an actual term, externalized costs. So those are costs that the company doesn't have to pay for.
Privatize profits, socialize the cost, privatize the profits.
So, but how do we replace then this cheap-ish, this costly but affordable fuel?
Well, I think it's acknowledging the cost first of all is the main thing. We have we have climate change denial. We deny the environmental impacts. It's about acknowledging the true cost and looking at the total cost of operation.
I'm sorry, Janet. Yeah, we're gonna have to wrap up, but Janet, please go.
No, actually, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say this is an incredibly informative conversation, and I think the bottom line is that folks really just need to get involved, and we need to keep pushing back on this fracking issue and the people that are trying to bulldoze over our lives. And I'm excited to hear about the folks from Denton will be coming into Tammany Parish to share their experiences about things in their tool chest that they used to fight fracking and won. So we know that it's possible. But we're going to transition now into Democracy Now, as we always do on News and Views, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 9 o'clock. And but thank you so much, Mike, for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
We'll have you back.
Again, we've been talking with Mike Stagg, Renaissance man, reporter and political activist, community activist, does a weekly radio show in Lafayette, Louisiana. We'd love to have you back. WTOL is interested in following this story as it unfolds further in St. Tammany. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me on.
If any listeners out there are interested in getting more involved with this fight, how could they do that?
They should, if they're interested in the St. Tammany fight, they should contact Tammany Together. And attend some of the events that are going to be taking place this weekend. There's a gathering of allies Friday night. There's workshops on Saturday. The people from Denton will be there. The Green Army is putting together a legislative agenda for this upcoming session of the legislature that will be announced in Baton Rouge at the Baton Rouge Press Club on February 2nd, I believe. And, there's a lot of fights out there. LEAN, Louisiana Bucket Brigade, Sierra Club, Gulf Restoration Network. There's a lot of people doing good work on these issues all across the state. A lot, if you want to find a place to join, just look around. They're all there. People are active.
Thank you so much.